Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Except today I'm not doing a science fiction book, I'm doing a movie, and it's not just me. Joining me is Juliana. Say hey. Hi.
Hi everyone.
And we're actually doing a special like pre-movie experience because we are going to be reviewing in a few minutes. Your time, in a few hours, our time, we're going to be reviewing the new Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens.
And
we haven't seen this yet, so we have no spoilers. We just wanted to say a few words before we actually go out and drive over to the cinema and get the popcorn and the nachos and the drinks and the ice cream or whatever we're going to do and watch the movie. And then in a few minutes' time, your time, we'll come back and you'll hear our thing. So this is just a quick warning. There will be a very clear spoiler alert when we come back. This will be the break. And when we come back, we will definitely be talking full spoilers. But hey, it's Star Wars, so why haven't you already bought your tickets? And just save this the rest of this podcast until you've seen the movie. Isn't that the plan? I think that's what we're going to do, isn't it?
That is the plan.
Okay, so first of all, it is new Star Wars. We just wanted to say a little bit about the run-up. What do we expect from the movie? Because normally there's not like expectations of movies, except for, you know, like next year, Independence Day 2 is coming out after a big gap. You know, it's sort of like a gap as it was between Return of the Jedi and The Phantom Menace. You know, it's like that kind of like generational gap between science fiction movies. But it doesn't happen very often. Star Wars is one of those things. So what do you think, Juliana?
I just wanted to say I'm really looking forward to Independence Day 2.
Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I love the first movie. Yep. But that's something totally different. Now, yes. Off to Star Wars. The weird thing is, I have absolutely no expectations.
I know.
Especially after the first three movies.
What like, do you mean? The prequels.
The prequels.
Episodes and 1 to 3.
And now it's like, all right, it will be just another movie. And if it's good, then it's good. If it's bad, all right.
Yeah. I understand what you mean.
I haven't seen any spoilers whenever we went to the cinema before.
Yeah.
I always close my eyes and my ears.
Yeah, we watched we watched the first teaser trailer that came out like a year ago, didn't
yes.
we? We
yes.
watched it and it was like 30 seconds
long
or a minute
long. Yeah, we had BB-8 in it or something.
Yeah, but it's just rolling around and there was no dialogue and that's pretty much it. And so
I totally fell in love with that little robot already.
Well, hopefully he doesn't turn out to be a Jar Jar Binks like annoying character.
Maybe he's the evil one.
Maybe he is. Maybe the Force awakens in a small round robot, a little spherical robot or something like that. So the new character names that I know is literally BB-8 the droid because it's cool and that's just become part of culture. But I don't know who any. I mean, I know some of the other actors who are in it. Of course, some of the original cast is coming back. But the great thing is about this is that it's actually been really stress-free to stay spoiler-free about this.
Totally.
Or not even spoiler-free. The only time, the other day, we drove past, it was a shopping center in the, a big department store in the middle of Berlin, and there was just, a massive billboard, massive. And I was like, oh, well, that's the first time that I've seen an image with maybe the bad guys put together with the bad guys and the good guys on you know, that kind of dark side people on this side and light side people on, you know, I don't even know what the storyline is going to be.
There's one picture I saw with a woman. I have never seen her. I don't know who she is. I
don't
just know,
the
she's
name.
Wearing bright clothes, probably then the good character.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But you don't know. Some of the bad guys had cool clothes and some of the good guys like Luke in Return of the Jedi, he always wears black, but then he's a bit dark sidey there as well. He's like force choking
he has
people
both in it. That's the whole point about him. One question, what do you expect, what should be in it, what,
in the movie,
what do you want?
Well, let me say what I don't want, and this is what I'm really afraid of, is that we had in J.J. Abrams, he rebooted the Star Trek, and remember, was it last year or 2 years ago when the second reboot movie came out?
Yeah.
The Star Trek Into Darkness. I said, you've not seen the first Star Trek movie, the 2009 Star Trek. And I was like, but before we watch the second one, we'll watch the first one. But before we see that, let's watch Wrath of Khan.
Oh,
you remember I said,
let's
watch Wrath of Khan. And we did, and it's sort of like, and you were like, oh, once watching Wrath of Khan, the Star Wars 2009 made more sense.
Yes.
What I was so disappointed with Wrath of Khan is that after 2000, the 2009 Star Trek kind of retrod a lot of the same ground of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
In Star Trek Into Darkness, it was even more of retreading Wrath of Khan, and even more references to the point where Khan turns up and, you know, one of them dies and then is, you know, brought back. No, you can't do that. That's really noisy. But it's a funny noise. Anyway, so it's a it's one of those things that I'm really nervous that this is going to be it, because we've had that already with George Lucas doing the prequels, just mining the original trilogy for what he thought was good about the original trilogy and what he thought people would like about the original trilogy. Oh, this character, you remember this character, now they're back. And this character, you know, and so many references made to it in a way which was totally unsatisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans hated. What I'm really nervous about is that J.J. Abrams thinks he knows what people liked about the original movies, and he does his own thing. And I know he's capable of doing this because he did it with two Star Trek movies already.
Mm.
And I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but what I saw there was somebody just doing what's called like the fan service. You know, it's just sort of like, here's another thing. Remember this guy. And I just saw Spectre again. And in there, it's sort of like people were there in the movie. Blofeld comes along and you're like, Blofeld didn't earn his place as a bad guy in this movie. The only reason he's there and he's considered an interesting bad guy is because we've seen him in previous movies on Her Majesty's Secret Service and other things like that. And there's so many references in Spectre to on Her Majesty's Secret Service, but it didn't earn it. It didn't earn it itself in its own right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the original trilogy was like, Anakin Skywalker is this great character. He's like, but he's not great in this movie. Hmm. You know, he's not. And then in Wrath of Khan, the Khan is there already as a character. And then he comes back it's not back because it's like a different continuity in the Star Trek Into Darkness. Khan comes back and he's like, and now I'm Khan. And you're like, but we don't. In this movie, you didn't earn your right as a great villain or anything like that. So what I'm really nervous about this movie that we're going into is that it's just going to be unearned references and service to the fans, and not... I want the villains to earn their place in this movie. I want the characters to earn their place in this movie. And I don't know if they will. Maybe they will. So I would say what I'm really, really nervous about is that it's merely a movie like the Star Trek reboot. And because it's by J.J. Abrams, but I think it's probably going to be better than that. Maybe, I don't know. I haven't read any reviews. It's been very easy just to not be on Facebook these last 2 days to miss all of that. So worst case, it's the Phantom Menace and the Attack of the Clones. But I don't think it's going to be worst case, because J.J. Abrams, he just doesn't make things that shit. If you know what I mean.
Right.
I don't think he's capable of being that bad. Best case, for me, the thing that I would be ecstatic about, if it's, say, as good as Guardians of the Galaxy, or I have as much fun as Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, it's sort of like a fun science fiction movie like that. I just don't think it's going to be a world-changing movie. But we'll see how it goes. In a few minutes' time, the people listening to this will know what we think about it, but it's going to be weird. What do you think? Best case, worst case? Or don't you really have that, like, you say you don't have expectations?
No,
in that
I don't
way.
Have really. What my expectations are pretty much similar to yours, that it's a standalone, just a good science fiction movie.
Yeah, but it won't be, because it's following on from the previous ones.
Yeah, but in the best case, it would just continue all the good things that we know about it. The good action.
Yeah, just 30 years later.
Nice science fiction ideas. Cool landscapes, backgrounds and stuff.
I'm sure it'll be good with lens flare.
Do you think that Disney is now involved will make an impact?
No, any impact that Disney will have is going to be indistinguishable from just not George Lucas being, or George Lucas not being involved is probably the biggest impact, if makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like anything that J.J. Abrams brings, or the scriptwriter brings, or the actors brings, or Disney brings, the biggest influence is the non-influence of, or like the biggest aspect that's going to change is the non-influence of George Lucas, or the non-control of George Lucas.
All right.
And any other influence is minor compared to that.
Okay.
We'll see how
but
it
do you
goes.
Think they go more for like a family movie?
I don't know. I'm guessing it's... I mean, it has to appeal to family because it's Disney, and this is like... they bought Star Wars and straight away were like, we bought Star Wars and there's going to be new movies, because they don't just want to make theme park rides and merchandising. They need these movies to be big. And it's going to be like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, where they've got like a Guardians of the Galaxy, but that also plays into the, you know, the Age of Ultron, and there's the Ant-Man, you know, and there's, we're watching Jessica Jones. That's all part of it as well. So I'm sure that Disney is looking at that and going, hey, let's just do that with Star Wars. We've got this massive back catalogue of property and stuff. Anyway, we're talking 10 minutes about the preview. I just want to say I am really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, me too.
We bought the tickets ages ago.
Yeah.
Star Wars has been a big part of my life for a lot of my life.
Probably one of the biggest impacts.
Well, it's not one of the biggest impacts, but it's one of those most constant sources. Certainly, as someone called Luke, who grew up with everybody saying, "Luke, I am your father. Use the Force, Luke," and things like that. Did you know I am officially a Jedi in the Jedi religion? Did I ever tell you that?
You?
Yeah. In the 2001 census for the UK, you could fill it out, and the idea
wrote
being
religion.
Religion, I put Jedi, because apparently if there was a certain number of people who were all in a religion, it would become an official religion of that country. So I think it's the only census that I've ever filled out, I registered myself as Jedi in 2001.
Not as a Rastafari.
What?
No, how's they called?
Pastafarian. Rastafarian is a real thing, a Pastafarian. Yeah, no, that was before Pastafarian. But yes, and I did that. But I'd have to actually look online. I can't remember what the outcome of that was. So yes, I am officially a Jedi. I enjoy the movies. I've done my own edit, my own fan edit of episode one. And really looking forward to this. And see the continuation of the epic. It's going to be a lot of fun. So come back in around about 30 seconds and discover what we thought of this movie.
Right. Let's go. Let's do it.
We're going to leave right now, put on our jackets, go to the car, and we'll be back in a few hours. One thing that I probably expect is watch sponsorship before the movie, because the last two movies I've gone to see in the cinema, they've played clips from the movie we're about to see. And also, we talked about this on The Martian, didn't we?
Yes.
Where there was like, and now, the watch. Here's the climactic scenes from this movie, advertising this watch. And then in the movie, clunk, here comes the product placement.
Oh, yay.
Same thing in James Bond as well, Inspector.
Oh, a watch as well.
Yeah, a watch. It was sort of like, beforehand, it's like, and now, climactic scenes from the movie and the introduction of the watch. And then when that same joke was told in the movie itself, you're like, we just saw that one before. And that's, so I'm expecting a Star Wars watch advert to play
doesn't
before
quite fit
and
so
have
well.
No, but I'm just expecting, it's happened the last two times I've been to the cinema, I'm just expecting it to happen now. Anyway,
right.
That's enough setup. We are going to put the microphones down and see you in about 3 seconds.
All right, bye.
Hello and welcome. I know we've already done this bit. We are back from the cinema. We just got back a few minutes ago. We had a little bit of food and now we're all caught up. We'll just do a quick first impressions and then we will go full spoiler territory. So, of course, it's Star Wars. Everyone will see this movie straight away if you're a Star Wars fan. And quickly, should people see it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. It's a good film. Actually better than I was expecting. What do
yes.
you think?
My expectations were topped.
Topped.
Topped by me not having any expectations,
yeah.
Made the movie actually really good fun.
We said before, like, we didn't have any expectations. I was saying, you know, if it was as good and if I enjoyed it as much as seeing Guardians of the Galaxy, it would be beating my expectations in that way.
Did it beat your expectations?
No, it didn't beat those expectations, but my lower expectations of, you know, what I said before, people have just heard it a minute ago. We talked about it 4 hours ago. But those expectations, that the actual filmmaking, and I was very happy with it, and it was a fun enough movie. Not that many things wrong with it, and just generally a pretty good movie. I would say no, a very good movie, but not like a classic movie or one that I just found amazingly exciting and entertaining throughout. I was just pleased with it all the way throughout. It was like, oh yes, more Star Wars, and here we have more Star Wars. And if you want more Star Wars, more good Star Wars, It is good. I think it's probably, I know this is weird to say this, probably the third best Star Wars movie.
For you.
For me. Well, again, I think looking at it, of course, there's Empire Strikes Back. There's the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's Jedi, Return of the Jedi, which is good. But in a way, I'm actually kind of glad that this movie now exists, that it doesn't just end with Ewoks. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm just saying. I'm not saying Return of the Jedi is a bad movie. I'm just saying that there's stuff in it which makes me think, oh, you know, looking back now, oh, come on. Whereas this movie, I think I would probably choose to watch again before Return of the Jedi, at least the first half of Return of the Jedi. So
okay, well, I would choose to watch it again pretty soon.
Yeah.
Again.
Okay. Well, let's just go and watch it in 2D or
in IMAX. IMAX. Yeah.
Either in IMAX or in 2D.
Yeah. How do you think? Does it? How well does it fit in the Star Wars universe? In the whole idea.
I think. Again, I don't. I think I'm going to have to answer that once we've let off the spoiler horn.
Okay.
To take the incomparable spoiler horn meme and bring it over to the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. So should we do it?
Okay.
Of course people don't need to know what if we think they should see Star Wars. They're going to watch Star Wars anyway. But
probably.
I'm just saying, hold off on listening to the rest of this until you've seen the movie. Because holy shit, spoilers are coming. Ahoy. They're on the horizon. They're arriving fast. Let's set off the spoiler horn. Go.
Boot.
Okay, pretty good.
Rubbish.
No, it was good. It should be more like... But yeah, your boop was good too. So, spoiler territory. How does it fit in with the previous ones? What I actually like about the... I know this sounds weird. What I like about the prequels is that it actually did introduce the idea or keep bringing back the idea of cyclical storytelling. And it was brought back into, you know... If they had have just done, it's just a bigger Death Star, and it was just that, I'd have been like, oh, it's just a bigger Death Star. But then I've already had the, oh, it's just a bigger Death Star. We had that already with Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
It's just another Death Star. And in this time, it's like, oh, it's just another Death Star, although this time it's actually called a Starkiller, which is a reference to the original name of Luke Skywalker. He was going to be Luke Starkiller. And then at the last minute, they were like, no, let's call him Luke Skywalker. And now this is literally a Starkiller. I don't know if it was mentioned. I don't think it was called that, but it is now literally a star killer. It's not just a Death Star; it's a star killer. Sucks the life out of stars and holds the star's power, and then shoots out across and kills planets. We've seen this before, but it even the prequels kind of brought into the idea that you do have this cyclical storytelling. Nobody's arm got chopped off, though. I was actually waiting. Of course, you're waiting for those beats, sort of like, someone's got to say, I've got a bad feeling about this. Someone's got to have their hand chopped off and replaced by a mechanical hand. We had one of those. We didn't have the others. But we did have the trench run. We did have all that kind of stuff. And in some ways, as it was happening, I was like, oh, this is just like it was. But you know what? Star Wars has always just been as it was. You know, Star Wars has always had those repeating themes. And those prequels and Return of the Jedi kind of set it up to like, yes, what we are actually wanting is this, you know.
Yeah.
And it's
we didn't
like,
have that much slapping. What? I expect more slapping.
You said, yeah, when Han Solo met Leia for the first time, you were like, is she going to slap him? And I was like, I hope so. And then they don't. They just are like, check us out. We're old here.
Quite disappointing.
Why? You wanted her to slap him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what was expected, you know, like to have that. I wanted that relationship to be fiery again. But then you know what? They obviously lived together for like 15 years and then their son you know, and you're like, okay, they had 15 years to get rid of all the fiery.
They already did all the fighting and slapping.
Or 20 years. I think this is meant to be set 30 years. Like, you know, it's like in real time, you know, the last movie in the 80s. Now here we are, 30-something years later, so it felt like it was set in real time. The actors coming back are playing 30 years older. Answer your own question. How do you think this fitted in with this, like the story and the myth and the epic of Star Wars?
Well, I think they had lots of things repeating, like where you could see, oh, okay, this is just another person who's like obviously working for some rubbish checking guy. Rubbish collecting guy. She's kind of like a slave kind of person.
Oh, yeah. She was a
and they had
scavenger.
A desert planet and an icy planet
and
a forest planet.
Yeah, I actually, when I first came there, I was like, oh, so they sent them to the planet of... I can't remember what the name of the planet was.
Yeah.
And they arrived there and it's all deserty. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this is I was going to say Arrakis. No, not Arrakis. This is Tatooine here.
Yeah.
We've got our full desert planet. We've got our dune-like planet. She was doing something. I was like, oh, then we cut across. And it was like, and then we got Rey, the main character.
Yes.
Or our protagonist, whatever. And then she was there. And I was like, maybe that's Tatooine. Maybe there's two. But then I was thinking, there can't be two desert planets. Because in Star Wars movies, you always have three planets.
Yeah.
You always have, say three planets. You know, that's the classic thing.
Yeah, that's the main, that's one of the things.
In Star Wars, you start off on Tatooine, then you go to the Death Star, which is the all grey, it's another colour, and then you end up and they're flying, there's the moon of Bespin, no, that's on the third one, whatever the planet is at the, in the end
exactly.
of the film. And it happens with all of them. You've got Hoth, you've got then the Cloud City, and you've got Dagobah, always these three planets, and that's what we had here. But yes, it did seem a bit weird how they were just stand-ins for the, oh, ice planet. We've been into ice planets before, haven't we?
Yeah.
And here's another one.
Yeah. And in other things, they were quite going along with the basic what we expect from Star Wars.
Yeah.
But what I really, really enjoyed were lots of jokes. I was sometimes really laughing out loud. The whole cinema was laughing out loud.
Yeah.
And some very nice characters. So, like, in some ways, I was more surprised by actually how the characters entertained me more than, like, in the first three, of course.
But the prequels, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, it was definitely, it was Lawrence Kasdan as well who wrote Empire Strikes Back. He was their main credit. It was, like, by him and, I should probably just look here on the page here. Yes, by Lawrence Kasdan, J.J. Abrams, and one more credit, which I guess is the other writer. Was it on
Who
this
is
page?
It?
And Michael Arndt. He's J.J. Abrams' kind of script guy. Other script guy. He wrote the other Star Trek movies with J.J. Abrams, J.J. Abrams and other people. So,
what I also want to say is about lots of things about the music, actually. Because.
Really? Can we just stick with characters just a little bit first?
No, okay.
Okay. Because I just want to say about the characters, and I was saying before, like, and this was what I was a bit nervous about going in. And I think I was kind of over-nervous about it, like saying, oh, what J.J. Abrams is going to do, he's just going to repeat he's going to do the fan service, he's going to repeat these ideas and repeat these things. The point is, he actually did that probably as much as he did in Star Trek. And as much as George Lucas did badly in, you know, the prequels, where he's like, oh, we're going to get these guys and they're going to do this, and this is going to be a repeating scene and the structure's going to repeat and all that kind of stuff. He did it, but you know what? I didn't mind because the characters were strong enough to make it their own. It's like, even as I was going, oh, I've seen this story before, but now I'm like, I've seen this story before, but now it's these other characters that I like doing it, or even these same characters that I like from before also doing it. You know, the strength of the characters made it
work.
I also think
that at the beginning, like, I mean, maybe in the first third of the movie, it is like a totally different setup. There's no repeating, oh, it's about this and that.
Yeah,
it's really kind of like a new story with loads of new people I've never seen before. I don't know what their position in the universe in this whole setup will be, and I thought that was very strong.
I think that's why it won me over, because at the end, or like, from halfway through, pretty much from the time, from the moment that
Han Solo turned up,
and they're like, and they turn up, and you're like, "Hey guys, it's actually a Star Wars movie. Let's get the cast back together. Hey, you've seen this bit before. You see." But up until that point, yes, it did win me over, because Rey, Finn, Ren,
Poe,
when they said they've sent the best, when the title card came up, you were like, that doesn't read like previous, previous. The crawl.
I totally the way they chose the words didn't sound like the typical Star Wars.
Yeah, and there wasn't like so many capitalized.
Yeah, and it
words.
Was like what Luke's whereabouts are.
Yeah,
they would have never written that in the first.
Maybe, but some of those certainly the prequel ones are really clunky. But it came up. There was nothing about trade disagreements. There was nothing about taxation of trade routes. It just came up like Luke's missing. This guy is going there. Although as soon as he turns up and he was there and he gave him the plans and he gave it to him on the USB thumb drive, Max von Sydow said, hey, take this. I'm like, and I immediately turned to you and said, he's going to put it in BB-8. BB-8's going to get it. He's going to get killed. And BB-8's going to be the one who has to make his way, and it's going to be about the drive. And I was just like, as I was saying that, I was like, this is going to be bad because it's just going to be replaying. R2-D2 has the plans for the Death Star, and he needs to get there to do that. But you know what?
It is not.
It was that. They were tracking down the droid, and he did have the plans inside of him. And all the time, they're like, we're tracking down the droid. And all that time, I was just thinking, take the USB stick out of the droid, put it in your pocket, and then people will be chasing the droid. And you can just like give it to someone else and say, oh, could you deliver this to this? But like, and they never do that. It's all like, oh, they're after the droid. And I was like, R2-D2 had the plans inside of him. But they weren't on a USB stick inside of him. They were in him. He was the important thing because it was him in his memory. And the way that they got it out was that, you know, they brought him in and they plugged him into their computers. There was no USB stick to pass between the two of them.
He was the USB stick.
He was the USB stick. And here we had BB-8 had the USB stick in him. And I was just like, but of course the people who had him didn't know that. Yes. I mean, like, Ren didn't know that.
No,
and
Ray.
Ray didn't know that. And Finn didn't know that. Yes. And BB-8 did know that, but BB-8 wasn't giving it to them. But it was one of those kind of things where they were like, oh, this he has now the thing. You know, this is... And I was just like, just give it, put it in a package and send it off somewhere. Is there no postal service? I don't know. Which is not bad. But what I'm saying is that all these things which were replays of previous storylines and previous themes and the previous ideas, again, I didn't mind it because it wasn't... they were actually characters doing it. It wasn't like Anakin as played by this person and Qui-Gon Jinn. Although Qui-Gon Jinn, I think, is actually one of the stronger characters in the prequels. But even then, it's like, well, why do I really care about him? Jar Jar Binks doing stuff. You're just like, I don't, anything that's happening on screen, I don't care about it. It was here. We met the people and we were like, yes, do that thing. I remember when Finn turns up and he's got his mask on and he gets that red blood down his face. And I was like, now we know who it is. It's like in, it's like at the beginning of Chappie where Chappie gets a red antenna stuck to him. So he's like, oh, now so they all look the same except the guy with the red thing on his face. And it's the same thing here. It's such a, you know, it's such an obvious way of knowing who we're looking at, you know. Yeah. And that was his first mission and he went off.
What I really like in this whole setup this time is the balance between female and male in this one. We had this troop captain.
Yes.
She was in the silver outfit.
We didn't see her, but obviously female.
Her voice was female. Maybe it was a guy. You never know. But I quite like this balance in that one and how capable Rey is.
Yeah, you don't think that the woman in that case, she's not going to be Luke Skywalker's wife who gave birth to Rey.
What, the one in the silver outfit?
Yeah, because I was thinking about this. There's this really fun article that I read, which was a speculation about who, like, what was happening, what was going to happen in episode 6. Like, so Empire Strikes Back had come out, and people were like, who's this? Who's that? What's going on? One of this fantastic speculation was Boba Fett. Why did Boba Fett, when he was shooting people, not do them? And why is there no disintegration? And the whole idea was that Boba Fett was actually the good guy. It was one of the good guys.
Yeah.
And what he was doing is he was going around pretending to kill Jedi, pretending to disintegrate them, not actually disintegrating them, but saying that he had, and then sending the Jedi off to be safe elsewhere. Anyway, the speculation is, oh, that's probably Luke's mother, you know. So they came and do that.
There is the option that she comes back.
She could come back.
They didn't.
Haven't seen the face yet.
They just sent her. Dumpster.
I don't think she is the. It would be that, but I'm just saying that. Unmasking someone female, because you said to me, well, if you know, it's obviously that Rey is Luke Skywalker's daughter. Who's the mother? And I was like, oh, it doesn't really matter at the moment.
I think it does matter.
Do you think? Well,
yeah.
Like, what other female characters are there? Not in this movie. Nobody important is female.
Maybe somebody who we haven't recognized yet, or we haven't got the story yet.
Yes, we don't have. There is a backstory to explore.
What I find very obvious is, though, that the way that the actress looks like, I told you that before, I think she looks so much like Natalie Portman.
And I was saying so much like Keira Knightley, but then Keira Knightley played Natalie Portman's decoy double in the earlier in the
did
in the,
she
yeah
I didn't even know
yeah,
that
yeah Keira Knightley was one of the ones that, you know, like, you know, one of her body doubles that, you know, she's swapping her identity.
Yeah,
one of them's Keira Knightley.
Oh no, I never realized that.
Yeah, look it up.
I will look it up.
So anyway, I thought Rey looked very much like Keira Knightley, the way that she spoke, and because she's doing the young female British stage actress.
But if you look at her with the way she's behaved with her smile,
yeah,
and
the way
and
she
her
held
teeth,
the teeth, yeah, the way she kind of
so Natalie Portman.
Just that grin when she's holding up the blaster. You're like, okay, I can see that there.
Very much like her.
And also, it's again, if it's not completely obvious by the movie, oh, she's drawn to this lightsaber. Pick it up. It's like, yeah. Why would she be drawn to that lightsaber?
It's like similar to the scene when Luke goes into the cave.
Yeah, but that's in his
cave.
But it was that moment again. And as it was happening,
well, much of that was in her head?
Well, all of it.
All of it. Exactly.
Yeah. But my point being is, sort of like, when that happens, I was like, oh, And she, as she was walking down the stairs, I was like, oh, this is the Luke Skywalker having to face, going into the swamp and facing Darth Vader down there. And then, like, that, it just happens. And I was like, but again, in this case, again, I didn't mind it because I was kind of interested. I did find it a bit weird that there's this whole bar upstairs with these revelers and these really bad guys. And she just waltzes down the stairs and BB-8 kind of bumps down the stairs behind her. And I was like, is there no lock on this door? And she just walks straight through
and
like,
lets her in.
Down an unlocked passage through an unlocked door, opens an unlocked thing. And I was like, well, what, like, is that by design?
Maybe she did it herself. Unlock it.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, obviously she has some powers.
So, and also the other thing is that R2-D2 will wake up when Luke Skywalker returns, and he doesn't. But then he does wake up at the end, and nobody comments. It's like, why is he waking up now? Luke Skywalker's not back. And it's like, yeah, but his daughter is, and he's sensing the, you know,
and
that's
the Force awoke in her.
Yes, so the Force Awakens is actually, I think, the Force awoke R2-D2.
Awoke things.
But then I was thinking, if she is the daughter of Luke Skywalker, she's only got 50% of his DNA / midichlorians, and Leia is also sister, so she's got the same amount of DNA as her daughter, as Luke's daughter would have, if you know what I mean. So, like, why does R2-D2 wake up when Rey turns up, but not when Leia arrives? Anyway, so stupid speculation.
So maybe... the mother was also somebody with lots of midichlorians.
Maybe. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe she's...
obviously...
But we don't know. It's out of... Yeah. We'll get that backstory later.
But what I really like is that actually Luke turned up at the end. You doubted that.
You said, will he be in this one? And I was like, the thing is, if at the beginning of the movie it says they're searching for Luke, either at the end of the movie they do find him, and he's important for plot reasons, or I was thinking they don't find him and we begin the next movie with
finding
like,
him.
Like, I thought this movie would end with someone like, you know, like at the end of Empire where they're like, hey, we're off to go and find...
Yeah, it could have easily ended with them flying off. It could have been a perfectly fine cutoff point.
The cutoff point came exactly one shot before it should have done. They were looking at each other. They were looking into each other's eyes. She held out the lightsaber. Yeah. They were looking. It was his eyes, her eyes. And it should have stopped. Instead, they went, and now, well, we paid for this helicopter shot, so let's put it in the movie. And then suddenly it became from this really intimate, tense moment where you're like, you know, it was just nothing. It was just the music, just the two of them. No dialogue, no nothing at all. She just holds it out. And then suddenly it becomes this like, and now, like in 3D, a disorientating, dizzying, distracting helicopter shot. Yeah. And it swung around and then it went, boom, directed by J.J. Abrams. And I was like, just one, four seconds. Just hold that for like another few seconds. Crescendo with Luke Skywalker's eyes or her eyes, whichever way around you want. It would have worked both ways.
Yes.
And then cut, but they didn't. They put a helicopter shot in. And I was like, oh, you spoiled it with the last... Well, not spoiled it, but that was a creative thing. But it did... They were like, let's end it epic. And I was like, no, let's end it intimate. But they were like, epic intimate. No, it didn't work so well. Okay, let's get into the music, because you wanted to talk about music. Yeah, I have something to say about the music.
Yeah. So it was obviously... John Williams.
Yes.
But the strongest moment that I felt most attached to the music was the old music.
Yeah. I don't remember any...
No new themes.
Oh, that was going to be my comment.
No, that's my comment because I'm the music person here.
Okay.
So because I thought the whole way through, I mean, the music was a typical music, the brass section of all the orchestras playing Star Wars soundtrack. Yeah. We'll love it.
Yeah.
It has lots of typical...
You can't
like,
go wrong just playing... And Leia's theme when she turns up and all these different things.
All
you're
these
just like,
kind
oh,
of
I recognize this theme. Oh, I recognize
that. But the strongest emotional attachments I had when the original music came up.
Yeah.
I almost had tears in my eyes at some point just because the music... made the emotion so much stronger and it's so impressive.
Well, I told you on the way down when we were driving there, I've done a fan edit of episode one and people say, oh, you're going to do episode two and three. And I've worked on them bits and pieces. I just mentioned this to Julianne on the way there. I said, I edited just the last 20 minutes or the last 10 minutes of the Revenge of the Sith which is the third prequel movie, in case anyone's not keeping up. And it's where they're all like, oh, okay, and we're going to put this thing there. And I was watching it, and I was like, oh, that's a bit rubbish. You know, the way it's actually done isn't very good. And then I did my own edit with the music that I thought should fit there. And then I did the edit. And then the first time I watched through that 10 minutes edit, I had tears in my eyes. I just cried at something that, like, made me feel that. Because I was like, oh, these images are good, and these characters are good, and this music is good. It's just the way that it's all put together, not good. And then when I put it together the way that I want it, of course, I'm tailoring it to what I want.
Of course.
Like that. And this movie did a bit of that. You know, there was never a moment where I was even close to tears, because it's just, for me, it's not that kind of movie yet.
No, I wouldn't say I was sobbing or something.
No, but there was feelings.
There was some strong
emotions there, yeah. So when this stuff was happening with the music, again, I didn't, like... Okay, let's take it about this way. First Star Wars music, you've got the main Star Wars theme, you've got Leia's theme, you've got these other, you know, these, and Luke, yeah. the Force theme with Luke, and he's at this, the sunset. You know, just play that music, and I'm already like, oh, like this.
Yeah.
Second movie, Empire Strikes Back, we get the Imperial March. Dum, 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 dum. Which is, again, classic. Third movie, I'm sure there's new themes in there, but it's generally there. They were like, okay, we've set up the themes, now we're going to have the battle.
Yeah.
Episode one, Phantom Menace, we have the Clash of Fates, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Da-dum, 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 da-dum. And it's great. It's fantastic music. And there's some other really good themes in there as well. And I know it's weird to say this, but the love theme...
The love theme
from the second movie is accompanied by the worst love story ever. Oh,
but the music is strong.
Yeah.
The
music is strong. And so I'm even saying, even the worst of the prequel movies, which I do think is the second one. Some people say the first, some people say the second. Nobody says the third movie. But I'm saying even then, there was a music theme which is really strong. Now, that might just be because I've done stuff with this music. But, like, people still know those things.
That is a strong theme music.
Theme music. And in this one... Yeah, I know, it's not a massive complaint, but it is kind of one of those things that was like, I thought we were going to have a new, enduring Star Wars theme that's going to be used in all... But it's not. If people are going to do Star Wars parodies, they're just going to use the old music or themes that we've already know and love. Maybe there is a theme in this which is going to come back, and I'm going to be like, oh, this is going to be the strongest thing.
But for this
thing.
Kind of things, I really have to watch it again. I already told you, I have to watch it again, especially for these kind of things. Yeah. I was concentrating... Like, a lot on, of course, what's going on.
Maybe there is a Ren's theme, which is going to become symptomatic of this movie.
Probably is. Mm. But it wasn't, like, outstanding enough to be in the foreground.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Other things, as we're on sound, the sound design in this, just not as strong as the previous movies. Even episode one had the pod race, which introduced into my conscience so many, like, new sounds and stuff. Just sound stuff. And in this one... I kind of, is it Ben Burt? No, who's it? Someone Burt? Anyway.
Who, what?
The sound designer. Very famous for creating the sound of the speed, you know, the speed bike, what do you call them? The Imperial Scouts on their speeders. You know, that kind of stuff. And it sounds fantastic. And the sound of the Millennium Falcon and the sound of lightsabers. Hmm. All these different sounds. And like I say, even in the first movie, in the episode one, you get new sounds. Like, if I said to you, what do pod races sound like? You're like, oh, one of them sounds like this. I mean, I've heard jokes where the punchline is, and, you know, and I had a bad stomach and I farted and it came out like a pod race from episode. You know, it can be, the people know that enough that it can be a new sound. And in this one, I can't think of anything. Nothing really stands out.
The thing with this one, there are not so many completely new things.
Yes, which I do think is a strength, because when you go completely new, you can just go, look, what's going, midichlorians? No, we don't want anything. Like,
exactly.
And this did feel like there was a few new little twists to the Force, a few little things. It's like, does a lightsaber call to you? Like in the first one, it was like, there's a button, you press it on, this was your father's, and then you just hold it and go, oh, well, this is an elegant weapon from a more elegant, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it didn't feel like, and now, like, mechanical things, R2-D2, like inanimate objects that can respond to the Force, can feel the Force.
Yes.
Like the lightsaber and R2-D2 are now Force objects. Is that just because, like, the one ring in you don't know Lord of the Rings, but, you know, if you carried the ring even for a short amount of time, you had some affinity to it. It made you bigger. It made you live longer and stuff.
Okay.
Is just being around Luke Skywalker enough to imbue Force into things like R2-D2 and his lightsaber?
Probably.
I don't remember.
I don't quite like so much.
It was like in living things. It's always, between every living thing is the Force. And now it's like, and these inanimate objects as well.
But how do you like the design of the new evil lightsaber?
With a crossguard.
With like looking so much like a medieval sword.
I quite like it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a sucker to novelty lightsabers. When Darth Maul comes out and he's like, and it comes out both ends, you're like, hey, yeah, look at this. And this, it wasn't novelty because, you know, we'd seen it in the trailer and he came out and I think it was good. And it was actually used for kind of dramatic tension. Like when they were holding each other.
Yeah,
he was twisting it around. There was lots of shoulder injuries rather than hands chopping off.
What I really, when I saw it was when Rey had the lightsaber and she was using it like a how do you call it, florette, like in fencing, when you actually do like a sticking.
Where did she learn that? I really wanted her to, because she had that staff at the start. I thought, she's going to get a double-ended lightsaber, and then she didn't. And I was
She was doing, like, she was going towards Ren, and she was stabbing it the whole time. Yeah. She was stabbing it to him, and I thought,
this
is not going to work. And then she always had to go back to normal fencing motions.
Really liked is when Finn picks up the lightsaber for the first time, and he's like, right, now I'm going to kill some stormtroopers,
and then the guy goes up.
Actually comes back to episode 3 at the start. There's these robots with double-ended, not lightsabers, but they've got these clubs on the end which can stop lightsabers.
Yeah,
and they chop the heads off. And I think Obi-Wan Kenobi, he comes in and slices all the heads off and turns around, but they're robots, so they just carry on. He's like, oh, okay, then got more work to do here.
Yeah.
So it's good fun to see non-Jedi using weapons which can stop lightsabers. You know, here that there was a kind of thing on the end. Which,
yeah, it was like kind of like an electric shocker thing.
It could catch a lightsaber, but it wouldn't cut through things. So it wasn't a lightsaber. It wasn't a non-Jedi fighting with a lightsaber. It was a guy. But then I was just thinking, what's he there for? Like, if there's no Jedi left, if there's only one guy, if there's only one guy with a lightsaber and that's his boss, why is he there? And I was like, is he put there to keep control of Ren? If Ren suddenly starts thinking, oh, you know what, I'm gonna go out, he's got that thing there.
Yeah,
that's actually Ren.
Oh, you mean it
that's
was the...
Ren control.
All right, so you mean it was more of a backup for the old guys,
for the Snork or whatever his name
what
was.
What is it? Oh yeah,
no, let me just finish. Oh, no, let's do Snork. Yeah. Is it Snork?
Yeah. What? Snork?
Okay, I'm going to tell you the worst
thing. Let me just say the thought that I had about him.
Yeah.
There were people watching too much Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
Holy shit, that is just Voldemort.
Yeah.
It is. It's just Voldemort. Like, I was like, what's Voldemort doing in this movie?
What the hell? Why is he having this not really existing nose? And why is he looking like a slug kind of... what's his guy? My precious.
The actor is Andy Serkis. Literally, Gollum is playing the same character.
It's like,
hey guys, this is Gollum.
What?
Andy Serkis over here.
And he's like grown up. All right, he's grown up, and
Gollum's
like,
grown up to be Voldemort.
It's like a weird mix of them. That came into your head as well. Yeah.
Yes. As soon as I saw him, I was. This was. I know this is weird. In the special edition, hopefully they just make him a normal person. I know this is weird. Like, you know, in episode 4 in Empire Strikes Back. No, in episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. It's the 6th one. So they have the same actor. McDermott, who plays the Emperor in all of the movies, but he's in the second one.
Yeah,
but he's in the third one. No, he's in the. He's in episode 5, but he's just a projection. Just a hologram.
Yeah, but he's a real person.
He's a real person, but it's not the same actor in the next one. It's actually, they just put a guy and it's all fuzzy and he's just in a mask.
Yeah.
And then when they were like, okay, now let's see the Emperor for real, they used a different person with a different voice to do that. And when they did the special edition of episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, they just got him to put the same makeup on and do that, and they put him in place again, if you know what I mean.
Right, yes.
So if you're actually going to do special edition stuff, that is a change which I actually think does work, you know, because the original special effect of this guy, and it's like, you can see the edges around his, it's like really bad, and it's like, oh, okay, this is actually the guy. So I understand that's why they do that kind of stuff. Whereas in this one, I'm thinking, if I was to do a special edition, we just, that all of those scenes, just reshoot it with a normal size hologram. Why is he so big? It was so pathetic. It turned up, I was like, why is he so big? And I was like, and then when I was, as soon as I thought, why is he big? I was like, is this real? And then I thought, oh no, it's going to be a hologram. It became a hologram at the end, I was like, oh, thank fuck, that's a hologram.
You know what would be so funny?
What?
Is if he actually, you see them in the next episode.
And he is that big.
And he's tiny.
Oh, he's like, yeah.
he's like a Yoda-sized kind of person.
But in holograms. Oh yeah, that's actually cleverer than I had. Because he was just too big. I'm just like, this is George Lucas subtle, and I don't want George Lucas subtle. I want, you know... Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of, you know, Guardian of the Galaxy.
Yeah, the big guy. Thanos or whatever
and
his name is.
How he was sitting in his throne, and people were walking in on this kind of catwalk kind of thing.
Totally a Thanos moment. Weakest part.
Yeah.
And also, they're not good enough with CGI characters yet.
It's
like his face, I was just looking and I was like, you know what? Jar Jar Binks was more convincing than that face. And the other, the thousand-year-old woman, I can't remember the character's name now. Let's have a quick look over here.
Maz
Kanata. Where is it? Maz Kanata, who owns Mos Eisley Cantina, which is for some reason on a water planet now, not in Mos Eisley anymore.
Yeah.
They're just not good enough with it yet.
I really quite like the idea with his glasses, though.
I like the glasses. I mean, the character was okay.
Yeah.
But I was just like, you know what? A puppet.
Yes.
Is real. I don't think they should have used a puppet, but I just wish that it wasn't 100% CGI because it's just not good enough.
But in overall perspective, I didn't feel too much like, oh, we have loads of CGI around us. Not this time. Not compared.
I mean, there was enough reality there that people were reacting with reality.
For example, the old metal guy, like the guy who Ray was.
The guy that she was working for. He was a
typical like
CGI character.
All right, yes.
Yeah.
But there are loads of them, for example, when they then came actually to the Resistance.
Yeah, the pilots.
And the people, you know, the guy who's in the fourth and fifth. Like the guy who had these.
There's a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked convincing. And loads of other people and
because
things did look convincing.
We weren't looking into their eyes for emotion.
Yes.
And we weren't looking into their eyes for terror. We weren't looking into their eyes for... Darth Vader is really great because he...
has no eyes.
Well, it's not that he has no eyes, but we are seeing the absence of emotion because of a mask.
Yes.
And Ren, in this movie, we were looking at him and the mask is cool because we are seeing a blank face and we're not getting emotion from it because it's a mask.
Yeah.
And I don't want to look at somebody without a mask on and not feel emotion because it's just bad CGI. Well, and I did get that one from both Gollum Voldemort and
the mouse
and the mouse can the Mos Eisley Cantina
Kanata
Maz Kanata Mos Eisley Cantina
I
Maz
must
Kanata.
Say so much though that
What's
I
that?
Preferred Ren so much more with the mask on. He takes it off.
Only a few people giggled when he took his mask off.
Yeah.
Were one of them. You said
I was kind of like, if I didn't do it out loud, I did it internally.
Yeah, it wasn't you. It was a few. But I was actually surprised when I saw his face. I was like, people are going to, like, as it was happening, I was like, he's going to take his mask off and it's going to look really stupid. It's going to be bad CGI or he's going to, and he wasn't. It was just like a dorky kid. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay with that. We've had dorky kids in Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, I understand.
Let's just go with it again.
But he was such a, like, a, like again, like as Anakin say, like in episode 2 and 3, where Hayden Christensen is just the worst, like, actor with, like, I only have one kind of view.
Yes.
And I always will look like
either us. With us or our enemy.
And this guy, he was whiny and angry. And that's it.
That's the thing. I liked him better with his mask on. And I was a bit annoyed that the fight at the end happened and he had his mask off. And I was like, leave his mask on and I'll actually feel more like
Like, he's then more of a bad guy.
He was a bad guy. What he just did before was really bad. And then he put his mask on. Like, if he'd have put his mask back on, it would have kind of sealed what he was,
yes.
if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It's like but Darth Vader.
The problem with this one is it's not so much showing, oh, there's good and bad in all of us. This showed more, oh, this is actually just like a psychopath person.
Yeah.
And he would have been more, he would have been stronger.
I never believed he wasn't immediately going to kill his father.
No?
No. Like, as soon as he says, I want you to help me with something, I thought he was going to say, die, you know, because he was saying, I need strength to get past this thing that's holding me back. And I was like, the thing that's holding you back is right in front of you. And then it was. And when he kind of held out the lightsaber, I was like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. And then as soon as the sun disappeared, I was like, nope, he's going to kill.
did he ask for help? I thought
he says, I need you to help me do something.
But did he also ask for a hug?
No, just help.
Oh,
I don't think
I understood. Would you hug me?
No, I think it's would you help me?
Oh.
I think he says.
Oh, all right.
Next time we watch it, we'll keep an eye out for that. We'll do it in the laser IMAX surround sound.
I knew immediately when he went on this bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Over a tunnel.
Do you think this is going to be where the showdown is going to happen between father and son? Someone's going to fall into the mist.
Yeah, and there's no like side things.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
I knew immediately but that this would be a scene where somebody falls down that thing.
And it was only going to be one person.
Exactly.
Yes. So we have said it. As I was going in, we were in Starbucks because you wanted a coffee to take in, didn't you? And so as we're going in, the people behind, someone talking about Star Wars and somebody put their hands over the room and was like, la, 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 no Star Wars. Did I actually shout out? What did I say to you? I kind of mimed shouting out.
Yeah,
I was like, Chewbacca dies.
Yeah.
So
he doesn't.
He doesn't. But Luke Skywalker dies at the end of the third movie. Leia dies at the end of the second movie. What do you think? We're going to have a 1, 2, 3 of the main cast of the first movie dying. Yeah, seven, eight, nine. It's going to be. I mean, they've got to get rid of them. If they all just retire, they've all got to make a big sacrifice.
All right. Yeah, maybe it is. Oh, let's talk about.
No. Let's talk about Han Solo dying.
Oh no, that's not. I mean, yeah. Well, what was to talk about that?
What did you feel when that happened? Did you
nothing?
No, I didn't either. That's what I wanted to say. Like it was like, and I was like, oh, Han Solo's going to die, and then he did, and I was like, oh, there he goes, and I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, I should have felt, maybe I should have felt.
There was no, like, the emotion when Luke and Darth Vader were fighting and Luke fell down. I had more feeling about this than.
I had, I know it's what it says, I had more feelings when Poe Dameron obviously didn't die.
Yeah.
But, like, when he was going down, I actually said to you, no, what did I say to you? It's like, him just going, oh, we've got to get the droid to this. Like, we've got to get this very special droid over here. We've got to do this. And I turn to you and say, yeah, Poe Dameron's going down. It's going to be up to Finn to do this
job.
But
we also knew that he would survive.
Well, yeah, of course, as soon as you didn't see his body, he picks up his jacket and was like, well, either he's dead with his jacket on or he's alive with his jacket. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to be dead. But just as I was looking at him, thinking, like in that moment when he's saying, oh, you've got to do this with the droid. And I'm like, yep, we're replaying this. He's going to find the droid. We're going to get the droid and the Death Star plans back to the Resistance or to the Rebels.
The Resistance?
Yeah, it's the Death Star plans to the Rebels. Anyway, we've got, this is what's going to happen. Like, this is, as he was saying that, I was like, oh, Poe Dameron might die. And I was more upset about the hypothetical death of Poe Dameron. Or what was it? Am I getting the name right?
Yeah, it's right. Totally right.
I was kind of more upset, Poe Dameron. Yeah, I was more upset with the thought of him maybe dying than when Han Solo actually did die. So, what are you looking at?
I just got distracted. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, no, no problem.
I clicked on the actor
of Snoke. So anyway, that's why
Snoke.
I wanted... That's the Snoke, Commander Snoke.
Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Andy Serkis. There he is.
Well, he could have just taken this guy.
Yeah, why didn't they just... Oh, also, I did recognize... I can't remember what the guy's name was who walked in when they were in the new ship which swallows...
the Scottish guy.
And he walked in. I was like, oh, I know this guy. He's Scottish. But now, of course, I don't recognize his name from here. Oh, look, Simon Pegg's in the movie. Who's Unkar Plutt? Anyway, there was a guy who comes in who is
He's cool. I like him.
The Scottish guy. Yeah, comes in and I was like, oh, I recognize this guy. And I was just thinking...
Unkar Plutt.
Yeah. What?
Oh, who's... Oh.
No. Who did he... the thing is, I didn't know Simon Pegg was in the movie, and now I've just seen his name now, and like, oh, Simon Pegg was in there. Of course he in. Of course he is, because he's in all J.J. Abrams movies. But he turns up. Now, this is what I just want to say about this, which is middle of the movie, a monster turns up, which happens in Star Trek 2009, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek movie. It gets to the middle of the movie, and you remember when I was watching it the first time, I was like, just wait a moment, there'll be this moment, it's really good up until halfway through the movie, and then something will happen, and you'll know what the stupid bit of the movie. And when that bit happens, you turn to me and like, this is the moment, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, this is the moment. And it's when he goes down to the ice planet and a comedy monster turns up and Spock saves him. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah.
Mild spoilers for the movie. But when that happens, that happens, and it's like comedy monster turns up that gets saved from. And when they were like, and they got into that movie and it was like, we've got three of these creatures, and I was like, here we go. Here's the mid-movie comedy monster from J.J. Abrams.
And I laughed about it very much.
When they said, don't you have more crew members? We used to have more crew members, stuff like that. Yeah. It was actually quite fun to have comedy monsters.
Yes.
And it really paid off by one of them just sucking on the front of the Millennium Falcon.
The guy sucking at the front.
Falcon's back. Millennium Falcon is back. Yeah. Which was funny. They were running through the...
junk.
They were running through the landing pads, and they're like running, and they're like, what about that one over there? Not that one, that's junk. And did you turn to me, or I turn to you and say, it's gonna be the Millennium Falcon? We both looked at each other, Millennium Falcon's just off the camera to the right. And it was,
of course.
I don't understand though, if Luke Skywalker is a legend or a myth, and Han Solo is a legendary pilot and rebel and general and whatever. Mm. Why doesn't everyone just recognize the?
Because it was stolen several times.
And it had a cover. Did it have a cover over?
Yeah, it had. Like,
we recognized it.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure. And it had a different. Radio dish.
Yes.
It had a square radio dish rather than a big round one, which gets broken off. We got broken off in the end of
over the course of time.
It does look a bit.
It just gets forgotten.
I always thought the Millennium Falcon was like a really bashed up old ship, which was like a one of a kind.
Yeah.
In a way, I even think in the novelization it says it looks like two old starship hulls like stuck together, like the top and the bottom. Just two, and they kind of put them together, and that's why it looks like a pancake. And but in here they just said, oh, it's an old Corellian class freighter, and I was like, oh, so there's more than one ship that looks like isn't. I always thought the Millennium Falcon was a unique, it is iconic in the movies, but I thought in universe it was a unique ship that only that ship looked like that. It was only that ship which had that shape. But now it turns out it's just one of a class of many. We've just never seen the others. Yes,
I think it's a, how do you say, it's a modified in many ways.
Yes, internally, and it's got the engines, and it's got the weapons.
And the hideaway things.
And the hideaway thing,
So it sounds very much like we are totally putting the movie down.
We're just talking about it.
Cool. What got on my face like the sucking monster was Carrie Fisher.
Oh, yeah. What didn't you like about Carrie Fisher? This is really weird. Yeah, I just want to say, for a movie that we both said, oh, it's really good, you should go watch it, we have just picked out loads of things. We're like, oh, this is a bit disappointing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's actually good. It really is.
It's a fun movie. It's a good movie. Why not see it?
But
then again, when I first saw episode one, I came out and was like, oh, that was okay. And it was only on like the longer I thought about it, the more I was like, that was a bit boring.
No, but I think this really is a strong
it's
movie.
It's going to hold up as a good movie.
It's a good movie. But Carrie Fisher, come on. I mean...
What was wrong with Carrie Fisher?
Well, if you compare her to Han Solo and Harrison Ford to Luke Skywalker, they look like they used to look like.
And Chewbacca looked exactly the same with no more grey hair. But, you know...
That's fine.
I like C-3PO, who's just got like a red arm. It's like, what happened to his arm?
I don't know.
Was that in the script that he had? Like, it's just like, oh, you didn't recognize me because of my red arm. And it's like, Anyway, Carrie Fisher.
She didn't do anything to her face. You want to tell me that she didn't do anything to her face?
No, she didn't do anything in the movie. When they all got together.
She can't move any muscles in her face anymore. She had two expressions, which she just used all the time. And she was walking around like this. I don't know. She had this really big shoulders and whatever. And I don't know. She was just not. She was just not like a natural person like she used to be. She used to be very natural and very like a princess.
Yeah.
This person was not Princess Leia. She was...
Yeah, I thought...
She didn't look anything like her.
I do understand what you mean. Han Solo turns up and you're like, oh, there he is again.
And he's just an old guy.
But he's just an older version. Yeah, and I do what I mean. And then even Luke Skywalker never used to have a beard. It's good that he has a beard now because old Jedi should have beards.
Yes.
Like, that is the way it goes. You know,
totally.
Anakin... Well, he never had a beard. But like young Obi-Wan, young Ben Kenobi didn't have a beard.
And then later he had a beard. Yeah, yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, it's convincing.
Luke is going through that thing. He should have a beard. He's got his Jedi cloak on. He's got his tattooing Jedi cloak on.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And that's good. I'm quite pleased that Luke Skywalker wasn't the one who turned bad. I think it's quite cool that it was Han Solo's kid.
And Leia's.
And when they actually said, I used to know you, when Max von Sydow was like, oh, I used to know you. You were from the light side. And I was like, oh, is this Luke's? And I was like, no, it couldn't know. And then, of course, you know, it was like the process of elimination is like, oh, who could it be from there? And it was good.
Of course.
So we know who's there. And,
so what's your opinion about...
Oh, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
My point is that face-wise, sure, old actresses often do things with the face and they don't have any expressions anymore. It's been one of those well-documented things. My problem was that she didn't do anything in the movie. She was a figurehead.
Yeah.
And in the first movies, it always seemed like, she was doing stuff. Like, she was there with the blasters at the start and she was doing stuff. And here, she was there and they turn up and they're like, hey, General. And then they go in and replay they even have the same computer. They say, oh, this is green screen. This is the Death Star. And it's all green. It's like, oh, that's actually quite cute. My point being that then it was like lots of other people said, hey, has it got this magnetic resonator and has it got a hyper screwdriver and has it got
Up with anything.
She didn't do anything. And then they all left. And then she came back at the end and looked at the Rey at the end. Rey. And then looked at her and then was a bit sad. And then the movie...
And even when she obviously felt that something was going on between Ren and Han Solo, she it was not convincing.
You wanted when they walk in, you said to me, she's going to slap him. It's going to be great. They're going to come and she's going to come out all fiery and slap him. And she didn't. Oh, no, we mentioned that in the podcast already, didn't we?
Yeah, but this kind of represents her.
Her slapping Han Solo is what she does.
She would have done that.
Yeah.
She is the person who would have done that. And she's not doing that anymore. And I think this is what makes her really weak.
But I thought the good line was when she said, and Han Solo said, I just went back to doing what I know best. And she said, so did I. And then Han Solo is doing what he did best, which is like scavenging and flying. It's all like, oh, shit, we've got the signal from the Millennium Falcon. Let's go and pick it up. And they go and do it. And he's actually doing stuff. And he's actioning stuff. He's the one who goes in. And she is just like, I'm going back to what I used to do best. And what's that? Oh, kind of standing around being a figurehead while other people go out and do interesting stuff.
Have nice hair. Stuff with my hair going on.
She kind of did that in the first movie. Let's go. Episode 4 in Star Wars, A New Hope. She did that because the pilots were going off and doing pilot stuff. And she had to be back in the base. And she was, you know, looking at the projections and being like that kind of stuff. Giving people medals at the end. In Episode 6... She's the one going down there and she's going in with the blaster and blasting away and
getting
Han Solo with her and Chewbacca's out there with the Ewoks and doing his thing and they're in the base and they're exploding you know, she's doing stuff and she was in action. And going back to the prequels as well, in the first one, Natalie Portman, Princess Amidala, she was all like, yes, I'm going to run around with the thing. And then in the second movie, she's all like, yes, I'm doing stuff. And there's the fight in the arena and there's the other stuff. And she's doing stuff. And then the third movie, she kind of sits around being pregnant and moping and then dies at the end. And you're like, oh, so you sit around moping and have kids. And then in this one felt, it felt like, oh... In the other movies, Princess Leia was doing stuff and being action, and Harrison Ford was doing stuff and being in action, and here, action is happening, but Carrie Fisher...
She's just old.
Maybe she's just too old, maybe she is... But then it would have been so good if they went into that thing and she was like, I know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
This is going to be the plans. We're going to do this, we're going to do this. You, technical person, tell me what you think. Oh, it could be this. Right, let's do that. And and she didn't. It all just happened around her, and I was like, was she ill on the day of filming or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just a bit like, oh, she could have done a bit more.
Yeah.
For someone who turns back up, so maybe in the next movie, I'd like to see her being a bit more leaderly.
Yeah,
leadering.
Also because it's all about her son.
Yeah.
She has to stop him by herself.
Now.
Yeah. I mean, she has to actually do the action, I think.
You think she's going to be the one who brings him back?
Well, or do whatever.
No, it'll be Rey.
Rey. But then it's lots of things that she has to do.
Yeah, well, she's got to do some fighting.
She has to do some Jedi training.
Okay, here's the thing. Ren has done a lot of. He's been training. He's been taught. He's had that lightsaber for a long time.
Snoke.
Yeah, she picks up the lightsaber for the first time, and I'm like, she seems to be really good at really lots of stuff. Like she knew how to do this. She knew how to fix the Millennium Falcon. She knew how to be a pilot. She knew.
Yeah.
And I was like. Oh, and she also knows how to do lightsabering. It is a bit like, wow, she is a bit too Anakin Skywalker. Anakin, what do you do? Oh, I'm just like the best pod racer in the world, and I fix droids, and I'm good at doing this kind of stuff. Of course, he had training, but it is one of those things where you just go, oh, force-laden, young, you know, brilliant person who is just fantastic at stuff. So,
but what I really liked was the scene when she actually found her, like, she was getting calm.
Yes.
You know, in the fighting scene, I thought that was a very strong moment.
This is what I really liked about the battles here.
Yeah.
And these moments where he's putting his hand out to get her to think something.
Yes.
And it's open just her music. Mind. It's just music. Open your mind. I'll get what I want out of you. Just music. And in the end is like, you are afraid that you're not going to live up to the... You're afraid you're not going to be as strong as Darth Vader.
Yes.
And he was like this. Yeah. And it was actually good that we saw his face. At that point, we should have seen his face.
Yeah.
But it was that was really good. And you said, that last time when it was just her and it kind of zoomed in. And you just saw the reflection of the lightsabers in her eyes. Yeah.
And it got all really calm. It was almost like she did like some meditation.
Well, she understood that. Oh, I am actually a force person. I've got to take some of the light side. At the moment, I'm fighting out of fear and desperation.
Yeah. And she went into passiveness. And this is the whole thing that goes through the whole...
It's purely like Luke Skywalker in the trench. It's like, you've turned off your aiming computers. Oh, you're targeting computers. Is he doing something wrong? It's like, I've got this. And it was that moment
and
in this movie.
And it was silence and like really like...
It wasn't silence. There was a lot of music.
Yeah, but there was something going on around him, but it was clear that he was totally in peace with himself.
Yeah,
and this was very clear.
Herself.
Yeah, but no, I mean in the other with Luke Skywalker.
Oh yes,
it's
the same moment. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same kind of moment, and I really enjoyed that one.
So while I did think it was a bit weird that she was really good at everything, she just happened to know how to fix this and happened to know how to fix that. You know what? That kind of fits in with Star Wars, and it's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be great, but you know, sometimes these young Skywalker people are just going to be child prodigies. Well, not even child prodigies, but you know, like. They're going to be in control of stuff like that. You understand? It's like, well, how can Princess Leia? She's only like 19 and she's in charge of the rebellion. It's like, these Skywalker kids. Although that was before that was written into the movie. But you sometimes think, wow, these guys are like young, but really, really going into stuff. So other things that I want to say, Finn. I really enjoyed Finn, the stormtrooper with a conscience, and obviously some kind of forcey stuff. And you know, when Ren looks at him and he's like, who's this guy? And
casually putting in, oh, you're not having a boyfriend or husband.
Yeah, oh yeah. All of those lines I really did feel. It's like, have you got family behind? Have you got family and parents, a boyfriend? Not got a boyfriend, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I also quite like that there was obviously some romance. It's like go hug elsewhere.
Yeah.
But at the end they're gonna drop him into the Bacta tank and he's gonna be patched up. And there is room for a relationship to grow there. Or, interestingly, not grow.
Yeah.
Which, like, if you show people just episode 4, like, just the first one, Star Wars, A New Hope, and you go, okay, into the future, where's the romance going to lie? You'd just go, oh, yeah, Luke and Leia. But it didn't, and it went off in a different direction. I would be interested to see if it
what
goes
direction
in that direction.
This goes.
And in this case, I'm just off the top of my head, I don't think Finn and Rey are going to be brother and sister.
Really?
Yeah.
How can you say that?
I don't know. I don't want to be racist or anything. But
by the way,
what?
Racism.
Oh yeah, no black people except the
holy. I mean, I'm just by fate or luck, I'm a white person. But that's pretty much all.
Fate or luck.
Whatever, I don't know. But in the whole movie, I mean, there are lots of different kinds of characters and stuff, but he is so obviously the only, I mean,
yeah.
There's this other black actress. And she's hidden behind the CGI.
Mos Eisley Cantina was...
like Maz Kanata. Why are they not just putting her in, like, just the actress?
Why couldn't she just be her?
Yeah. This would have been great.
It's like in Avatar, where is it Zoe Saldana, what her name is? And she plays the main female Avatar.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, yay, a black female actor playing a romantic lead with a white person. Oh, they're both blue. You know, it's sort of like, oh, this could be really interesting. Like a white man falling in love with a black woman.
But then it is actually better because they are all like just blue. All right.
Yeah.
I can totally live with that.
But I'm just saying it's the same kind of thing where you just go, oh, yes. Even though it isn't a lead, it's not a lead role in this one. But I'm just saying Avatar was kind of not more disappointing. You kind of understand what they're doing there. But at least now she's the lead in Star Trek, or one of the main characters.
But I'm looking forward to seeing all these people back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like Harrison Ford. See, his credits order, Harrison Ford is number one in the credits order, which I think is fitting for his place in this movie.
Fine. But why is Mark Hamill then second?
Well, if you're going to have a Han Solo at the top, you've got to have Luke Skywalker second and Princess Leia third. Yeah. It's either Luke, then Princess Leia, then Han, or it's Han Solo, then Luke, then Princess Leia. That's the way that you're going to do this kind of
stuff.
I'm not sure what else we've got to say. We've been going for about an hour, and we did that extra 10 minutes at the start as well. So I think we should wrap it up. Other things that you really liked about the movie? Is there more stuff that you liked about the movie? The 3D-ness, I kind of got annoyed at me at one point. There was a few points where I was like, oh, this is cool.
Yes.
But you know what? I'd like to see it not in 3D.
Yeah. There was this one bit where I thought, oh, this actually, oh, it is in 3D. When the Starfighter pointed at your nose.
The Star Destroyer, you mean? The
pointy ship. Yeah, it pointed at your nose and I thought, oh, all right, I'm watching a 3D movie. Otherwise, I always thought, oh, shit, there's so much shit in the foreground.
Yeah, like, it is a J.J. Abrams.
Dust and stuff.
And snowflakes and lens flare.
Lens flare, right.
It wasn't bad.
But it wasn't like the movie that we watched, The Life of Pi, was so much better.
Well, that was
a 3D
kind of filmed
movie.
In 3D. Yeah, yeah,
and
it wasn't
had
retrofitted.
So much. Yeah, and so
there
I think,
is the. I always notice it now when I'm watching retrofitted 3Ds. If there's someone standing there and like the curve of their face, there's just something about curves of people's faces, which is always like a blurred line down the edge. Have you noticed that?
Also,
and I always notice that in the retrofitted 3D.
Also, the way that people get in focus.
Yes.
Sometimes they move too quick and then the focus has to adjust just right this millisecond after.
What you're trying to say is that as they move forward, the 3D-ness is out of sync with the focus changing.
Yes.
So the focus is changing as they're coming in as if they're walking through focus planes.
True.
But the 3D-ness is on a different, passing through different planes of closeness.
And I could totally see that. And there's one scene where Finn was very far in the foreground.
Yes.
And the camera just wasn't quick enough with his movement. And I thought that was a bit of pity.
Oh, the 3D-ness wasn't
the
quick enough.
Yeah.
There was this really major, major 3D fault. I think it's when BB-8 goes off into the forest and Rey runs after her. And she goes and there's a pan like from the Mos Eisley Cantina. And they pan across a forest. And it's like, okay, here's a big panning shot. And you know what? It's just too much for the retrofitted 3Ds. There was a section right in the middle, which is really obviously right in the middle. And the depth is just wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's actually lots of depth there into this. And it's just like, oh, they've just forgot to do the 3D-ness of that bit.
Yeah.
And then when they actually get into the forest, they're like, okay, if a tree is right in the foreground, we'll make it 3D. And then the background will just, it'll be a flat background. And I noticed that in the forest. That forests are just too complicated to do convincing retrofitted 3D.
Yeah.
That was the only moment where the 3D was just like, oh, that's a pity that they missed that. And now, and the rest of it is just like, okay, these are just 3D movie artifacts or that we're seeing from the 3D process. Whereas Life of Pi was actually filmed with two cameras.
Exactly.
Side, it's a different
It
kind
is
of
a totally different. And also, just that, but I already knew that from the one first trailer that I saw, I will love BB-8. And I still love him. He's so cute.
He was actually smaller than I thought, you know, because I thought he was going to be R2-D2 size, but he was smaller.
He was smaller. But that just the way he's doing his way and then he gets captured and then Rey takes him. And then just you don't need to understand what he's saying, but just the way he does say it, it's so...
Well, it's nice to have an R2-D2 character, which isn't just R2-D2 in like the fucking another movie with R2-D2 being the most important hero character.
Yeah.
When he met with R2-D2, I was like, oh, that's really cute. It's like a mini R2-D2.
Yeah.
But I do like it at the end that he stays with his pilot guy. Like, it's obviously, he's obviously belongs to
Poe
Dameron. Dameron. He's obviously his, but then Rey goes, hey, we're going to meet Luke. R2-D2, come with me. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yes, of course R2-D2 is going to be on the ship that goes to find Luke, because that's who he's been waiting for.
Also, when you went already out, when the credits were on, loads of people stayed. Like, almost like the whole middle of the cinema
I have never seen that many people stay through credits before, which is good.
And so I was able to read all the places where they shoot. And when, in the last scene, they went to this planet and with this islands. And,
I turned
and
to you and said, that looks like Dingle Peninsula in Ireland,
thought,
where we went
this
last summer.
This is so much island. And
it was.
It was.
Yeah.
And the other places were Abu Dhabi and Iceland.
Yes.
Not a surprise, because Iceland is
Where was the forest? Was that in Ireland as well, do you think, or somewhere in England?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm not sure.
Well, it didn't say. I mean, it just I just thought these three places. Maybe
there
were
there
somewhere
other
else.
Places as well. Or I was it just? Oh, okay.
They were just the places I saw.
Okay, that's no problem. Yes. Again, I've said lots of things which were kind of like, well, like, about this movie.
Yeah.
But I'm going to bring it back around to the start. All of the things that I found a bit disappointing, like the really bad fake CGI with the. With the Voldemort Gollum, grown up Gollum who turns into Voldemort, the Mos Eisley cantina owner, and a few other things. Yes. But they are kind of minor complaints which just come with modern movie making. Like if you're gonna have a full 3D CGI character, you're gonna have like the dead eyes. No matter how big you make the glasses and how appealing you make it, she takes her glasses off and I'm just like squinty dead eyes with no emotion anymore.
Yeah.
And Voldemort, he never had any emotion. Like, as I was, in a way, I would rather him to be like, this is what I'm saying. In the special edition, I want him to look as shit as the old holographs. I wanted him look really fuzzy, so you can hardly see him. You can't see his Voldemortness at all. He just looks like the Emperor was in episode 5, you know, in Empire Strikes Back. That's what I would like from that. But it all comes down to the point, all of these things which make me go, oh, that 3D bit was a bit disappointing. Oh, this is something I've seen before. Oh, I wish that character was stronger. Oh, I wish Carrie Fisher's face moved and she did stuff in the movie.
Yeah, but
and,
are
oh, I didn't
like,
really feel anything when Han Solo died.
That happens more in seconds.
Yeah, but it's all just passing. Yeah. But all of the stuff which we, like, all of the character stuff, it's really difficult to say, oh, I like this character, and I like it when they said this. Otherwise, I could just go through the whole movie and say, oh, I like this character. I think some of the acting at the start was a little bit weak from Rey. What's her name? The Daisy Ridley. She's a new actress. I've never not seen her in any movies before. Seems like this is her first big role. And it said on Wikipedia this is her first motion picture. Yeah, look at this actress. Her top credit is right there.
Yeah.
That's the episode 8 anyway. But yeah, not a lot of credits. Some of her acting.
I wish she was born 1992.
Oh yeah, young.
Yeah.
Some of her acting at the start, I thought was a little bit too. Like in some of the acting in Star Wars, like the first one. Even though some of the acting in there is a little bit like, it was a little bit ropey. You're like, oh, you could have sold that line a bit better. But it works then because it's like, oh, okay, I'm enjoying this. And at that point in the movie, I was I'm so glad it started with Poe Dameron.
Yeah.
Because he was such a fun actor, and Max von Sydow was just right there, and you're like, and as soon as they were there, I'm like, oh, great, right, we've got guys with personalities.
Yes.
And when Ren is sort of like saying to Poe Dameron, we've got you, and he's that wise ass kind of reply. And I'm like, and it just when that happened, I was like, you know what? I think this is going to be okay. And even at some of the early scenes with Rey, where the acting wasn't quite as strong, I was like, don't worry, Poe Dameron's going to come back on.
Yeah.
And the stormtrooper who with a heart is going to come back on, and everything's going to be okay again.
What I really, really enjoyed about this movie was also. Loads of parts of the dialogue was really strong, and some really good jokes in it, and also some of the cinematography. For example, when in the first scene when Ren walks off and he stops for a second to look at the stormtrooper who's not moving in a field where everyone knows where to go. This is really strong, and it didn't have neat words, and I think that was really strong how they went across with. Just the power of the film of just the picture without specific music or any dialogue. Yeah. I think that was really strong.
Yeah, I think that's good. No matter how much the fun the jokes were, it's like, oh, Millennium Falcon, this is the ship that made the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs.
And you said next to me said 12.
No, I knew. I was trying to time it to say 12 along with Han Solo, but I didn't. I said 12 like half a second before it, and then you grinned at me. You know,
yes.
All of those lines, like I say, my favorite moments, which are going to stick with me, are going to be the dialogue-less, like the ones without dialogue, those moments, like I say, what we're talking about before, when they're just looking at each other.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the ones that stick with me.
In this movie, definitely.
In this movie. And also just at the start, when the things are coming down, and there's this flickering light, and the stormtroopers are inside, and it's just sort of like flashing, like a strobing light, and they're going light, dark, light, dark, light, dark. Just that start bit, I'm just like, oh, you know what? That's a really good image. That's a really good image. So,
yes,
yes, lots of really good stuff in this, which balance out the stuff which makes me go, oh, it's not.
And I think in this kind of movies, we're just over the top critically, because these movies mean so much.
Of course.
That you will have. It wouldn't be fair if we would just watch it and wouldn't pick out all the things that we noticed.
Yeah.
So I think the noticing is more being more hypercritical.
I think in the other way around, to look at it, is like, if we were going to talk about Empire Strikes Back, if we watched Empire Strikes Back now, even though we've seen it many times before,
yeah,
and then we went through it and said all the stuff that we recognize about it, I'm sure that, I mean, there might not be this much negative stuff about it, but we're talking about ropey special effects. I'm sure there's loads of ropey special effects in that first movie where we go, oh, well, that wasn't convincing, and this wasn't convincing, and I've never actually seen these special editions of the first movies. I actually find...
Special editions of the first movie? Four, five, and six?
Never seen the special editions of any of them.
No?
Never. I actually... Oh. The other day, there was this thing... What we were watching on YouTube, and it was like 10 worst special effects of all time.
Hmm.
And they actually showed part of the scene between Han Solo and Jabba the Hutt from episode 4, which was cut from the original.
Yeah, next to the...
And they showed it and that stuff. I'd never seen that before. That was the first time I've ever seen that.
Oh, really?
I'd never seen CGI Jabba the Hutt in episode 4 before. I've just never watched them. I've watched the originals.
I was very angry when they did certain cuts and certain like inserting certain people.
Yeah, into that. But I've only ever seen original versions, digitally remastered versions, and the and despecialized versions.
All right.
Of the original trilogy.
So we should watch the special editions.
No, I'm not. Why would I say, it's not that I'm a purist or anything. It's like, but every time I've sat down to watch those videos, I've never been like, oh, let's watch these special editions. It's like, no, I've got the other ones right here. You know, like, why would I watch the special editions? And when I actually saw that worst special effects of all times, I was actually like, holy shit, it's as bad as I've heard for literally the last 15 years or whenever they came out. You know, the special editions came out in the 90s or something, and I've never seen them. And I've literally, for not 20 years, the special editions came out. I don't know when. No, was it after the original trilogy? No, it was before the original trilogy came out. They did the special editions.
No, I think after.
Or was it after? Anyway, let me put it this way. For at least over 10 years, I've not seen CGI Jabba the Hutt in those things. And the only times I've seen, you know, in Mos Eisley with all the things that they take the piss out of and go, you know, when there was the...
Yeah, well, they're adding creatures and stuff.
I've only ever seen them in videos about how bad it is that stuff has been added.
All right. No, I have actually seen the original version and then the special edition.
Actually, no, I remember last time when we watched Empire Strikes Back... No, Return of the Jedi together.
You watched it.
Yes, I watched it. Yeah, that was a special edition. So let me put it this way. I've never seen A New Hope. I've never seen episode 4. As special edition.
Okay.
Because I do remember seeing it, like the Pit of Sarlacc, and was really disappointed that the Pit of Sarlacc is it's not a vagina, it's now got this the penisy thing that comes out and grabs, you know,
like
it's a
tongue thing.
There's a protrudingness out of it rather than a mysterious hole.
Yes.
But then it was fixed in another way, because it used to be that Han Solo was dangling off the side of the platform.
Yes.
But like nothing was holding him, and then now they CGI'd like a rope tangled around him. I was like, well, at least that makes more sense now.
Yes.
So I'm saying that we've gone through this movie and went, oh, that bit doesn't make a little bit like all of those things are in the original.
Yes.
And that's what George Lucas was trying to fix, and that's what these different fan edits try and fix in these other movies.
As well,
so,
yes.
What else do I need to say? No, I think that's it.
Oh, watch that movie.
Two final questions. If someone was to say, at the end of episode 6, like the up until this point, the furthest along in the stories, in movie canon anyway, not extended universe and stuff like that, all of that, like, what would be the state of the galaxy after that? Did this lead up to it as you would expect?
No.
What would you expect to have happened at the end of the last one?
Well, the Republic,
yeah,
would have been back in place.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't really remember. Were there any bad guys left?
This is my point. Like, this is the thing that kind of... It didn't annoy me because I understand we're having more Star Wars. So there's got to be, like, the Resistance and there's got to be... you're going to have the two sides, whatever, like that. My point is that at the end of Episode 4, A New Hope, they blow up the Death Star. And in my head, like, if you were to say, what happens next? It's like, oh, yeah, Princess Leia, she's going to be in charge now and that. But it's like, no, Darth Vader is back, you know. Because Darth Vader survived, you go, okay, there's still more stormtroopers out there, there's still more spaceships, the Emperor is out there, we know there's more politics out there, we've seen that kind of stuff.
Well, the Emperor is dead.
No, I'm saying that's at the end of Episode 4. So I'm saying when the Empire Strikes Back, he comes back and you're like, well, of course, they've still got unfinished business.
Because there was still something, yeah.
Because we know that there's the Senate's been dissolved, and we know that there's an emperor, and we know that, you know, all of the fall of Rome stuff. It's kind of part way along to the fall of Rome, and then it's there. But then at the end of Empire, the Return of the Jedi, like you say, Darth Vader's dead, the Emperor's dead. We, in the special editions, we see people celebrating. Oh, that's what I've seen as well. We see people celebrating on Coruscant, and we see people celebrating on Naboo and other places
and
like
all
that.
The places.
It's like all the way across the galaxy, far, far away.
I didn't quite understand this. What is this? The thing called
the first.
The new one.
But they're like, and I was just thinking, but like. In this situation, like at the end of Empire, I actually thought, okay, what we didn't have, no, at the end of Jedi, what we didn't have at the end of A New Hope, now at the end of Jedi, this is it. People on Coruscant are celebrating that the Emperor is no longer there and they're free from the tyranny.
Also, what happened to the stormtroopers? Who took over this big army?
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like, oh, there's no clone troopers anymore, but we do. But I thought the whole point of the Moon of Bespin and the... and all of that kind of stuff. I thought the whole point of that, at the end of the battle, that now the Rebel Alliance has won, they will reestablish the Senate on Coruscant, they are going to start up a new Jedi Academy, and all of that kind of stuff. You know, that's what I was expecting. And here, it's sort of like, oh, remember the Resistance? You know, remember the Rebels? Now they're not the Rebels anymore, now they're the Resistance. And I was like, no, I wanted it the other way around. I wanted it that the Rebel Alliance is now the Senate.
Right,
And the stormtroopers...
And that the bad guys are actually the smaller faction.
Yeah, they're the smaller faction, and they're coming back. Whereas in here, it's sort of like, oh yeah, we got another Death Star, and this time it's, you know, the massive planet rather than it's no longer a small moon.
I haven't even thought about that so much, but yeah, you're really right. It would have been better if the Republic and
was the strong one,
and some rebels in that case would be the bad guys fighting against those.
Yes, and I thought it would be like, okay, there is the way that I wanted this setup. This is what I'm saying. The way that I want this setup to be is that, okay, the Rebel Alliance won, the Senate is back. Some of the clone troopers, because they were actually an army from there. It's sort of like, okay, now we're in control of you. If you're going to be clone troopers, if you're going to be stormtroopers, if you're going to be now where, oh, we get orphans and raise them up and have conditioning and stuff like that. Whatever you want to do. But now that is actually, they're now fighting for the Senate again, like they were in the Clone Wars. It was like their army.
Yeah.
What I wanted was to be like the rogue fleet. No longer rogue squadrons and rebels. I wanted there to be like two or three Star Destroyers or the big Imperial ships. No Death Star. And I thought, oh, it'd be great if there's like five or six of them and they've been out on the other side and they're still holding out hope. It's sort of like, you know, like the Pacific Island in Japan and stuff like that. Yeah. Like there's four guys there like, we'll never surrender.
And also, the subtitle actually could have allowed this happening.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it could have meant that the Jedi would then be still there, and then the Force Awakens would be more
the dark side.
The dark side awakens.
I was really hoping it'd be more dark side, but now we're like, oh, you know what? there are other generals who are supreme, and there's this other guy, this he's no longer Count Dooku, and he's no longer Palpatine, but there's just another guy who just happens to be even more in charge.
But maybe we get more backstory in the next episode.
Yeah, but like, I don't want more backstory.
Yeah, I know.
I really wanted it to be like, okay, a new start. The Force Awakens, where it's good, there's peace in the galaxy, but it feels like, what have they been doing for the last 30 years? Like, how did they build a whole new Death Star? And how did they wipe out? It's like, oh, that's half our fleet of TIE fighters. And at the end, it's just sort of like 8 TIE fighters fly in and try and take out the Death Star again. I'm like, what have the Republic been doing? What has the Resistance been doing? What have the Rebels been doing? All of the R things, all the things that begin with R, which I thought were going to be in place. What have they been doing all this time? Now, again, it's just a mild disappointment because I realize, oh, actually, what we want to do is keep, you know... In a way, I see what Disney wants to do is go, oh, let's just do the same movie again.
Yeah, keep the scheme.
The underdogs are still the underdogs. What I really wanted is to Leia to no longer be a princess, no longer to be a senator, no longer to be a general. Hmm. She's now like the chancellor. She's like the guy in charge. She's now Chancellor Palpatine. She's now the head of that. And I thought that would be the more interesting career trajectory.
Yes.
And now it's like, oh, yeah, she's still in an underground bunker. She's still in an underground bunker with like 8 you know, TIE fighters in garages upstairs, and that's still all they've got.
Yeah,
that was, I felt a little bit disappointed. I was like, okay, after episode 4, we went back and they're still there, but then episode 6, yay! And it's like, oh no, episode 7, let's go back, and they're still in underground bunkers with displays and people hanging out and going, oh, what can we do? There's always a way to blow up these things, you know.
Yeah, that was right, and I thought I was very quite disappointed when they had, oh, and this is the Death Star, and this is the new thing.
And it's we just need, this is the weak spot on this. I'm like,
I know that humans don't learn from their mistakes from the past. We do know that.
But how could it be?
How can they be that, like, uncreative?
Also, I was wondering, like, at the end as well, like, this Death Star is Starkiller. I like the reference Starkiller. It sucks in the entire power of a star and is holding it inside a planet. First of all, how would that happen? Because that would then be a black hole with that much power. But I don't want to talk about too much. I don't want to think too much about physics about this. But
it's in the galaxy.
Yeah, it's galaxy far, far. But they kill a star. A star is now contained within a planet.
Yeah.
As soon as anything even slightly goes wrong, it is. It's like, oh, we blow it up. I know now it's slowly blowing up. It's like, no, the magnetic containment thing is gone. It means you now have a star inside a planet. And then it kind of breaks apart all like, oh, like this. It's not, that's like the definition of a supernova, of a star collapsing on itself so much that it creates a new layer of fusion and blows up. That's what's happening. There is a star and a black hole inside this planet. And then it blows up and it kind of sinks down onto itself. I'm like, how can something explode and get smaller when it contains a star, which is bigger than it? I didn't understand the physics of that. A star is inside a smaller thing, and then when it blows up, it shrinks. I'm like, maybe it is now. Maybe it did get compressed down, and now it is a black hole.
It did compress down, and then it expanded.
Yeah, but like, but it was, again, it was one of those things. And then there was a person on a bit of rock, but he got away. I was a bit disappointed that we didn't see, like, at the end of episode three.
They
leave Anakin. It's the same scene. Yes. Oh, we're on this side. Oh, I've got the high ground, and now he's laying there injured. But we actually see Palpatine come and pick up Anakin and turn him into Darth Vader.
I was expecting this scene too.
And we didn't get that scene. Maybe it was filmed. I don't mind if it was filmed or if it wasn't filmed.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in there.
It was missed.
And I kind of missed that. I was like, we saw her go back up and pick up Finn and take him into the Millennium Falcon off.
Yeah.
But I also, which again, there was a few scenes which I was like, oh, this is straight out of episode 3. Mm. And you know what? I didn't mind it. Because some of those scenes in episode 3, quite visual and actually quite striking. Some of them work. But it is interesting to see there is some stuff taken from the prequels that we actually see in here. Although, yes, whatever. Not too much. I was actually saying that the new version of my own fan edit, I was going to wait until to do the final script and the final voice and stuff until I saw this to make sure that it doesn't break any continuity of my own head canon.
Does it?
No, it doesn't actually, because they hardly they don't mention anything that happened before like the last quarter of episode 6.
Yes.
You know, it's only the stuff that happens in the closing moments of episode 6. If you only saw like those last, if you saw the second half, like forget Jabba the Hutt's palace and they just go and they're like, right, we're going to knock out this new star. If you just saw that, you would get all of the relationships, all of the characters are right there and you could finish and then just watch this movie. So you don't even have to see the original trilogy, only the second half of episode 6.
Well, one more question. Would you change the... now we have 7 movies.
Yeah.
And you told me about this this recommended order that you once heard, like, which is episode 4, then 1...
Yeah,
then
machete order.
Yeah.
Not included.
All right. However the order
it goes
was...
4, 5, 2, 3, 6.
Okay. Where would you put 7 in it?
Oh, no, 7 is obviously the last movie. I mean,
so it is 7.
Yeah, it's definitely 7. Definitely 7.
Okay.
But also, with the machete order, the idea is that it brings out the cyclical nature and who's bad and who's good in this.
Yeah.
This actually, it's good because this movie understands what... It doesn't just understand what the original trilogy is for and about. It actually does understand the place of the first 3 movies.
Okay.
And I think that's a strength of this movie, that it doesn't reference anything and it's got the characters from the second ones, but it does make it clear, sort of like, we do understand what is going on with this cycle of fathers and sons and generations and masters and students and stuff like that. It does bring out that, even the stuff that was explored. I mean, it even says, there used to be Siths and then there was the Empire and now we have the new... what is it?
Order?
The First Order. First Order. And it's sort of like, the First Order is the third lot, is it? And I was like, yeah. we did actually want to mention some of the bad guys, the other bad guys, the generals, some of them, pretty good. I thought a bit young.
What's his name? Donald
Gleason.
Oh, that's how you pronounce
Domhnall
it.
Gleason. Oh, there's a movie that I want to see called Ex Machina, and Domhnall Gleason and Oscar Isaac are the two main characters in that.
I've not seen it, but I heard about that one too.
But I do want to see that too. But yeah, General Hux, I'm glad he's back for the next one. He was pretty good. Young.
Oh,
quite
that was
young.
It. Captain Phasma. Phasma.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed her. That was the one in the silver?
In the silver mask, yeah.
Yeah.
Recognizable face mask. Yeah, some pretty good stuff there.
And the when they were in the Millennium Falcon, and then these two scavenger...
the two groups,
things,
yeah.
They were pretty fun too.
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, Simon Pegg was listed with these... Oh no, he's a bit further up. Anyway,
yeah,
whatever. So, yes, I just thought some of the bad guys were good, and you said the speech that he gave with the Nazi flag behind him.
Oh wow, that was quite epic.
It was good, but then I was thinking, these are conditioned soldiers or clone soldiers or whatever they are.
I was sort of thinking, why is he doing this to them?
He doesn't need to give a speech to them, shouldn't he be... And that's what I actually kind of... again, what I kind of missed from the prequel trilogy, which is so weird to say, that at least in that one, like, even though the politics were stupid and didn't make sense, at least the politics were there.
Yeah.
And in this one, all those politics, it's like J.J. Abrams says, okay, no Senate meetings, no politics. But then it came together that are kind of like, but these things are acting in isolation.
Yes.
Like in that time when they killed the star and shot it across and killed this other planet.
Yeah.
In the first movie, it kind of worked because it was a very narrow focus, and they just turn up and go, "Oh, where's Alderaan?" And it's like, "Oh, these asteroids are the remains of Alderaan."
Yes.
And we just hear that Alderaan is going to be destroyed. And now in this one, we just see it. Literally, we see these planets get shot, and this hyperspace which shoots a part of a star through hyperspace, and then it knocks out the planets, but they see them.
They separate out in 5 different things.
Yeah, and knock out the different planets, and then from other planets in different systems, they could look up and see that system being. And I was like, I didn't understand any of that. I actually didn't like that. If I was to do this edit, I would. In fact, it wouldn't work. But in some ways, I want it to be. I want not to. Oh, is that that was the Scottish guy who was in Prometheus?
I think
is that
was
yeah,
him, wasn't he?
So maybe when he turns up, I was like, I recognize him from Prometheus, and maybe some of the others as well. My point being that, like that, them you us seeing Alderaan being destroyed,
yeah,
I liked it way better in Episode 4, A New Hope, when we didn't actually see it being destroyed.
Yes.
We never actually saw that happen. And in other movies, the things that we didn't see happen is actually better. I like seeing stuff not happen. For example, when you see the walkers come in like this on Hoth, you're like, how did they land over there? It's like, it's not important. We just see what the characters in the movie are seeing. It's sort of like, oh, walkers coming in because the shields are there and they have to walk through the shields rather than do that.
Yeah.
And the final thing that I want to say about this, the Death Star, the new Death Star, the Star Killer.
Yeah.
The Star Killer Death Star thing.
The planet.
The planet had shields around it. In the same way that J.J. Abrams broke the Star Trek universe being able, because they do transport from planet to planet. It used to be you can get from a ship to a planet, and then in the 2009 movie they did the beam me up Scotty from a planet into a moving spaceship, and then in the next movie they went from like another one, and they went to different planets. They're like, well, why do people need spaceships anymore?
Yes.
And now in this one they're like, oh, what we need to do is we need to come out of hyperspace inside the thing, and I'm like, but if that looked too easy, if that's possible, why didn't they do that in all the previous movies when they had a shield around? Like the whole of episode 6, there was a shield and they had to blow up the shield generator on Bespin to get them in. But why didn't they just go in and do it that time? Why didn't it happen that time?
I don't know. Maybe they weren't capable of it.
No, but it is. They were capable because Han Solo and Chewbacca in the Millennium Falcon, they're doing the flying. They're going in there. That's what they do. If that was possible before, why didn't it do that before? And it kind of breaks continuity in the background. And now in the future, anytime there's a shield, we're just like, well, we just come out of hyperspace inside the shield. I mean, it only works because they knew where the planet was going to be.
Yes.
But why don't they go out of hyperspace, have a look and go, oh, it's still there, and then go off, do a loop of hyperspace, and then come back? And then, why isn't that always been used in the Star Wars universe? So that was one thing that just at the time I was like, oh, if they can get through the shields that easily and just disable it by running in and, pulling a lever somewhere, oh, turn off the shield, okay, in the chute. Why didn't all the X-Wings come out of hyperspace within that? And sure, some of them would have been destroyed, but it doesn't matter if a few of them destroyed, as long as a few of them make it. And it seemed a bit easy, even for the Millennium Falcon, it seemed a bit easy to come out of hyperspace inside the planet's atmosphere. And I either don't want something like that to be possible, or everyone to give it a go. And they didn't. And I was like, please don't break Star Trek. Please don't break Star Wars spaceship physics and economy in the same way that you broke it for Star Trek. And I think he kind of did a bit, but not too bad. The movie made up for it. What else have you got here?
Nothing. That was just
okay. Let's wrap it up. I said we were going to wrap it up literally half an hour ago.
Yes,
let's
actually wrap it up. You put more
extra special
extra
special down. It's a special episode
down to the.
This is our Christmas episode. This is the special Christmas episode. You know,
true.
Right? Yeah. So happy Christmas, everyone. Happy Star Wars Day. Although it is not May the 4th. It's a fun one. Go see it. Of course you're going to go. Why are you even saying go see it? But that's what we think.
Who wouldn't?
I would recommend, actually, probably if you want more structured and maybe more informed Star Wars discussion, I do enjoy the Incomparable podcast. Their Star Wars episodes are also very good with Jason Snell and the whole cast not the whole cast. They always have a repeating cast of people who like talking about Star Trek. Not Star Trek, Star Wars. I was just been talking about Star Trek a second ago. About Star Wars and things. So if you enjoyed this one, you'll probably enjoy that one just as much, or if not more. They'll probably do loads of episodes about it, where we are not going to talk about Star Wars again until maybe the next movie comes out.
Or we watch it again and then have
We won't. We won't do another podcast. This is a first impressions podcast, literally less than an hour after the movie finished. We drove home and now here we are. We might do something extra special. I mentioned this before at the very beginning of this episode. Maybe people remember. The first trailer before this was, it's like, oh, people driving through the desert, and it's Jeff Goldblum turns up, and it's Independence Day number 2, and we mentioned that.
Yeah.
So we'll probably go and see that, and I've already done an episode. I think I was talking to Jesse about it, and it wasn't meant to be an episode, so I put it out as a half episode about Independence
Day. But we were also
Day.
Talking about this
we mentioned it a few times as one of our favorite modern science fiction movies, and there's going to be another one, so we might do a fun Luke and Juliana at the Movies podcast about that, and so we'll see how that one goes. But it was funny, as soon as it came on, you were like, close your eyes, and close your eyes, and then we heard the speech, and you think, because we were talking about the way I said, I know Jeff Goldblum's in there because I saw an image about it.
Yeah, and I asked if Bill Pullman would be on it.
I was like, I don't know, he's just the old president. And then his voice came on, I was like, there he is. And then it's like, oh no, this is just a recording. It's the recording
of the speech. I tried to not only close my eyes, but also my ears, which obviously didn't quite work, so.
But it's okay. Oh, talking about this, about avoiding spoilers and avoiding anything, I'm really pleased that I did. We haven't actually went back, but we're going to now look back at the trailers and see how much it would have been spoiled. But I really enjoyed going into this, not seeing anything. Because when Ren's ship turned up, the one with the really big wings, and it came down, I was like, oh, that's so great. Yeah. And as I was thinking that, I was like, I'm so glad I didn't see that ship in any of the trailers. And other times that happened, spaceships were doing stuff and fights were happening. I was like, I'm so glad I didn't see any of this. There was the Millennium Falcon flying through the broken down Star Destroyer on that on the desert on Arrakis. Not Arrakis.
Jakku.
That was happening, so I knew that was going to happen when maybe that was in the back of my brain that I knew that's why the Millennium Falcon was going to be there. But also it could have been that, oh, the Millennium Falcon is a trading post and they're going to book passage on it or something. Yeah. But as soon as it took off, I was like, oh, they're going to now fly through there, because I remember that from the teaser trailer. But I think that was pretty much the only thing from that original teaser trailer that I recognized was the Millennium Falcon flying through. Oh, and the X-Wings flying across the lake, you know, because they were really low to the water as they arrived and stuff. Yeah. So that, I remember that from the teaser trailer. Mm. But everything else was... Oh, and the guy, of course, the cross blades on his lightsaber.
Yeah.
The handle, the cross the hilt. And so there were a few moments, but nothing plot-wise, nothing character-wise. Didn't know who anybody was. People were turning up. I was like even when Poe Dameron...
And Finn.
Well, I knew Finn was in it because he's in the... His head pops up.
Exactly.
But when they were like, they sent their best ever pilot over there. And I was like, oh, this could be the young girl on the speeder. Is she the best pilot? Or it could be Finn. And it wasn't. It was just a guy I didn't know. I was like, oh, Poe Dameron. I don't know how much of a big actor he's going to be and how much of a part in this movie is. So when he was like, oh, you've got to do with this, I was like, he could actually die because I don't know how much of a main character he is because I haven't seen the posters or I haven't seen that many things. Anyway, so that was good. Anyway, let's...
I really
got to wrap it up.
No, but I really want to say...
Oh, okay.
There was no watch advert.
There was no watch advert.
And there was no product placement that I could see.
No.
Because I don't think any of the companies exist in the galaxy far away.
I can't believe you're saying there is no product placement.
What?
BB-8 was created as a toy.
This entire thing
is one advert. It's just a massive advert. Star Wars is Star Wars and everybody else. Yes. There's this symbiotic relationship.
I understand what you mean.
That holds. There's a force that holds everything together in the universe.
Of course.
It is Star Wars and advertising and products and stuff. Star Wars is the product placement that is every other product that makes
but
you
buy.
But
it's a product
stuff.
By itself. So it the whole movie is the product. But there was no
Wars,
watch.
Yeah, but Star Wars is used to sell everything. And everything sells Star Wars, and all of the stuff in the movie you can buy.
Maybe watches.
We'll buy us this year. We'll get ourselves. Last year we got a Lego. You know exactly what I'm going to say. Last year we got some Star Wars Lego, and we'll get some Star Wars Lego. And if they have,
I want a BB-8.
If they have Ren's spaceship with the big wings,
I want a BB-8.
Yeah, Lego round things in Lego is actually really hard. I'm not sure.
I want a real BB-8. You know, you can buy them and they roll around, and
yeah, you control them with your iPhone.
I've seen some reviews about it. They suck up all the carpet fluff.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they get stuck with the magnets. Yeah. They were like...
No, it's like the little roly things.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the one. Okay. It's so cute.
It is very cute. So that's it. We don't give star ratings to non-books because we keep those apart. So this is just going to be a good movie. An enjoyable movie. Lots to talk about. More than normal movies, but there's a lot more to Star Wars.
Well, I think it's just a bit more, we're more passionate about this.
Well, it's not so much passionate about it. It's just, that, like I say, the expectation, and it's paid off. This is literally the first Star Wars movie in my life. First of all, the first one I've seen in 3D. So it was actually weird to say, oh, that's how big a hangar is on one of the, you know, the Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
I was like, I was inside. I was like, oh, this is actually quite big. You know, I've always known it's big, but it was like 3D was another way to tell scale. And the other one is, it's the first time I've actually sat down in a cinema and watched a Star Wars movie and have been like, you know what? It's good. It's good. And every other time that I've seen Star Wars movies in a cinema, it's been like, okay, you know.
It's like, oh no.
Sitting down and stuff was happening. I was like,
rolling down a hill in love. No, I really enjoyed it too.
I hate sand. Whatever. Anyway, so it was good. Good fun. Good fun to be there. Forget all the negative stuff that we said. But we have to put this out here, all there. Now what I can do is I've now got loads of stuff. There's lots of articles about Star Wars that I can now go and read. And or like I say, the trailer that I can go and read and other podcasts
you
that I've listened to about it.
All the spoilers.
All the stuff that I've been avoiding. There's a forum that I chat on and there was a Star Wars. It was called Star Wars The Force Awakens, or Star Wars non-haters thread. And it's because people go, oh, I don't really care about Star Wars. It's like, this thread is not for you. Go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And we were chatting in there. Oh, I hope it's this. And then someone posted some images from the movie. And I was like, okay, I'm signing out of this. And
this is not for me.
This thread is no longer for me. But now I can go back and read.
Now we're going to finish the podcast.
I can go back and read 300 unread posts about friends chatting about Star Wars.
Okay.
Hater-free zone, it's called.
Goodbye, Luke, for this evening.
What? You're trying to... Okay, you can wrap it up. Why? Do you need the toilet?
No, but obviously yeah. you want to look at 300
No, not right now. I'm just saying from now, this is going to be a Christmas present to myself, is all the behind-the-scenes stuff that I've not watched right. and all the making-of stuff that I've not watched and all the specials that I've not watched and the interviews with the people that I've not watched. It's not been stressful to avoid spoilers. It's just been the anticipation has taken the place of normally in movies that I'd like to see. I mean, I don't watch the trailers, but I don't actively avoid spoilers. And if someone comes, yeah. oh, what's this about? Whereas yeah. now I can just be like, okay, it's just avoided, and it was very easy to miss it all. And now I can do it all from a position of knowledge.
All happily come towards you.
Yeah, and the next time I see the movie, all of that and other people's opinions will be there. I haven't even seen... The only review I've seen of this movie so far is the one-star review at the bottom of the IMDb page, yeah. which was quite funny. You're on the cast list there, not on the yeah. major page. Yeah,
it's actually quite a fun review.
Yeah, I don't know why that's the one. I'm ashamed of being a Star Wars fan after seeing this movie now. So no. I literally have no idea what other people said, except for on Twitter when I just looked before. Rim in New York on the Geek Nights podcast, he liked it. And actually, I was going to say, John Siracusa, who I also follow on, he's on the Incomparable podcast. He said something, but I think it was just like, he just said, I can now delete 40 Twitter filters, because I guess he was... he did that as well.
There's some more messages there about Star Wars. The female stormtrooper captain was ridiculous.
What? No, she wasn't. She was
JJ fine. Abrams is the epitome of a mediocre director.
He's okay.
Funny how women get dumped on when they're action heroes.
I like this. The New York Times archives. We called stormtroopers robots in a 1976 Star Wars review and have yet to correct it in print.
Sweet.
Because two robots and their captive in Star Wars, directed by American graffitis George Lucas, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
Oh, look, John Siracusa says here, finally watched the second trailer for The Force Awakens, and wow, it's really good. Glad I didn't watch it, though. So, yeah, we will also do this.
Yeah.
Here he is. Just deleted 42 Twitter mute filters. So I can also do that, although I've not been muting anything. I just don't follow enough people on Twitter. Right, that's it. Thanks a lot for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. Juliana is on Yuku Berlin, J-U-K-U Berlin, if you want to follow Juliana. She doesn't post very much on there.
True. Then I'm not a Twitter person.
Again, neither do I post very much. So you can check that one out, and you can become our friends on Goodreads and see what we're reading. That doesn't really matter about this book. Audible, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. No point in doing an Audible ad now. Otherwise, email me, luke@juggler.net, if you want anything. Actually, as we came home and sat down to do this, I got an email from Matt, and Matt said, hi Luke, oh, it's Star Wars, subject Star Wars. Hi Luke, have you seen it? Plan on podcasting about it. I said, just got home from the cinema, setting up to record right now.
And so
that,
yes.
And that was it said 6 minutes ago someone sent you this email as I was pressing record. So that's good. Email me, luke@juggler.net, and that's it. So thanks a lot. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.